Zedon, thinking out loud in color.
Does he know this is just audio?
October 20th, 2005.
I'm Tim Shadle.
Hi, welcome back to Zedon. Today we're talking a little bit about Ruby. It's been a couple of years that Ruby's been on my radar. I first started reading about it with the Pragmatic Programmer's book, The Pragmatic Programmer. And they talked a lot about learning a new language. And they later on in their blogs, they talked more about Ruby and saw that their blogs were run through RDoC. And, seen some other references to Ruby. I kind of just watched, really. And then earlier this year, as a lot of people started being interested in Ruby, especially the Ruby on Rails, I decided to, I put it off too long and wanted to really kind of dig into it. I picked up both books on Ruby. Well, first the second edition of Programming Ruby by Dave Thomas and a couple other guys. That's an excellent book. It covers Ruby 1.8, and I thought it was very well done. It took an approach that brought you quickly into the language to help you understand the feel of the language, because it's got a different feel from Java, which has got a different feel from C. You can always tell a C programmer when you look at Java code that's been written by somebody that's used to C for a long time. You can see that it doesn't follow the same kind of flavor of Java. It doesn't have the same idiomatic way of doing things, really. And it's the same with Ruby. I tell a Java programmer's written this Ruby because it looks way more like Java than it does like Ruby. So I think that the book gives an excellent introduction to some of the ways in which Ruby is written and some of the idiomatic expressions and the way of doing the Ruby way, I think is what they call it. So I picked up that book. I also grabbed the Agile Web Development Rails and in the first batch. And now, both books, I think, are just excellent. I love the Agile Web Development with Rails because it does two things. It shows an agile way of development, which, a lot of people are going to be used to, but a lot of people are going to be sort of used to it. They're not going to really see some of the different things you can do in agile development, and it's the Rails book is just well written. It shows the features of Rails and the different tool sets that are involved with it, and some very detailed explanations after the tutorial part. So, been very impressed with both books. The first real, let me say this. I've done some stuff with Rails on the side. I'll get into that probably another time. But I wanted to focus today a little bit more on some of the Ruby stuff I've done at work. There hasn't been much. It's just we wanted to try to look at a couple of different things we needed tools for. And Java just seemed like it would take too long or just too big of a hammer. And so the first thing that we really did at work with Ruby was a branching tool. I've talked about Subversion, and we've got, I talked about our cruise control. We've got lots and lots of different projects. And so what we wanted to do is be able to branch groups of these projects all at once. And we had different ways, specifics on how we wanted to do that. So we took a look at Subversion. So we took a look at Ruby and said, let's try a little script. So I got out an editor. We put up just a little script that did some really amazing things in a short amount of time. We used the RexML. I don't know exactly how you say it. It's REXML parser that comes in Ruby. And really pretty quick, we were able to have a little script that connected up to our Subversion server and chose the XML version of Subversion. Now, let me pause here for a second. With Subversion, when you set it up in Apache, I've typically set up three locations. One location is /svn, which goes just like the straightforward description of server setup in the Subversion book that sets up the access to the actual version repository, and that's where all your command line tools go. So that's just your basic setup. The next one I set up was an SVN-XML location, which does similar things, but instead it comes back, the format comes back as XML. And if you want it to look pretty on the screen, you need to place an XSL file in a particular path. If you go to Subversion's version control place itself, you know, the subversion.collab.net, I think is what it is, you'll see that they have that as their default place that you can browse, is their XML thing. At least they did a while back. The next place I set up is /view SVN, that location. I have mapped to a view CVS installation. And again, you can see the view CVS is also fairly popular among places that have Subversion, and they want to be able to let users do web browsing. We use it all the time to be able to browse the different places, do diffs on the source and all sorts of stuff. So, of those three, the one that was really interesting to us at this point was the SVN-XML, because that let us get back a tiny XML document for over the web that told us which things were files and which things were directories. So, and the contents of a particular directory. So as part of that script, we wanted to access one folder, look at the directories inside, make some decisions about that, and then run some SVN commands that would copy the contents of those directories to a different place in Subversion tree that would be a branch. It seemed, you know, fairly straightforward, but, you know, we had some particular things we wanted to do, which complicated it a little bit. But I was really pretty surprised with how easily we were able to write just a small script in Ruby that did exactly that, that connected to a web server, that downloaded a file, that parsed it into XML, that used an XPath expression to grab different nodes, iterate over the collection of nodes that came back, figure out exactly which one of those met the rules we had in place, and then execute a Subversion command from right inside the script itself and report on what was going on. And it was really just amazing. I thought, you know, it finally we had a way that to write some of these tiny little tools that, you know, would automate a lot of our manual process that we as programmers did. I mean, a lot of, you know, we're so used to every day writing stuff for other people to be able to automate their work, and yet we've got so many manual processes ourselves. So it just puts our products at risk, because the manual procedures really can get in the way. We can mess them up. We're everybody's human. We just have mistakes. And so being able to take this little piece and see the potential we had was really pretty exciting. So after we did a little bit with that, we went on to a few other things. We decided that when we branched, we wanted to set up a particular naming convention for the version that was used in the Maven project. I mentioned Maven last time. We've got all of our different Eclipse projects as separate Maven projects, and, you know, I mentioned the modular builds. So one of the conventions of Maven that I didn't talk about is that the version that you're currently developing in ends with snapshot. That does a couple different things. It lets your Maven locally download any updates to a particular library that ends in snapshot so that you can get integration binaries as you're moving along. So say we've got, you know, 15 different projects that are currently in development, and two over here rely on one over there. Well, the one over there gets updated during the middle of the day, checked in, cruise control picks it up, builds a brand new build on the build box, and puts out the binary that was successfully built. Well, then the two over here that rely on it, they notice the next time the developer builds in the box that, hey, that's changed. And they'll grab the integration binary, and voila, we've got integration news almost immediately because of our continuous integration build. And the way that Maven's version name convention works, because that was, that version itself was named Snapshot. The two projects over here were able to pick it up and, you know, we find any problems within just a couple, just in, you know, small amount of time for integration stuff. So it's really kind of cool. When we go to a branch, we like to give it a name that has a version number in it. Whereas when we're on the trunk, we just have everything named just Snapshot. So we said, okay, well, what can we do about this with our Ruby script? So in addition to the stuff that we did beforehand with grabbing the different directories and begin moving them, we said, let's do one step further. Before we make all those subversion commands, let's get the directory set up and then let's go change the project XML files. Now that actually turned out to be pretty fortuitous because we were able to, you know, bring the XML file in with just as much ease as we were able to read the subversion XML file from over the web, run through the Maven XML file, look at all the different versions, and we've actually had a little bit of trouble with inconsistencies because, you know, one project here will say Hibernate 302 and another one over here will say 304, and we get some inconsistencies, and that becomes a challenge to be able to kind of settle down amongst all these projects. So with this tool that was going to update just the version string, we said, okay, well, let's also standardize all of the versions of these standard tools that we're using as we're going through this. And so it quickly kind of became a little bit of a tool that was being able to help us manage these many different projects and our build process and our branching process. So to finish up what's getting to be a longer story, we had this Ruby project, did a bunch of our branching for us. We went ahead and after we added a couple more things, we wanted to make sure that this script could be run by more than one person. So we pulled up in the book, took a look at the section, we pulled up in the programming Ruby book, took a look at the section that described Ruby gems, and after a little bit of trial and error, we were able to make a rake file that built our Ruby gem. And so then we were able to take this gem, install it on anybody's machine, and voila, we actually had all the code there that was versioned, and we were also able to have a command line program. We were also able to have a command line program that was on the path so that our configuration manager could just go to the prompt, type, you know, the program name, give it the options, and, you know, or any one of the other developers. So it's actually been, you know, a really good, very effective tool for us. Now, is it going to replace my job? No. But is it a tool that's absolutely worth knowing? I really think so after this experience. It's been something that it was really surprising to me how easy it was to access resources over the web. Surprising how easy it was to work with the XML. Awesome to work with regular expressions. I used them all over in doing these little rules we had. And being able to call out to other programs from inside of Ruby is so easy. It's way easier than it is in Java. So that for this kind of thing, for sure, Ruby is something you really ought to consider having in your tool belt. And it can really work side by side with Java. I really feel like it fills in a lot of missing gaps for the day-to-day programming work that you've got to do, that different system administration tasks or data munging that you've got to do. It's really an excellent tool for that kind of stuff. So go ahead and take a look at it and see what you think. Try out a couple little scripts to, you know, check out your Java class path. Compare Java class paths in two different environments to see if there's a problem. You know, if that's what your now class not found is. You know, which of the jars is different in the class path. I don't know. Do a couple crazy things to try out Ruby. And by all means, take a look at the Excel example in the book and run the 15-line thing that opens up Excel and makes the chart spin. It's kind of cool. you've got something to say, go ahead and leave a comment on the weblog at timshadle.com or send me an email at zdotpodcast@gmail.com. That's zdotpodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.